Welcome to We're All Gonna Die and Other Fun Facts, a semi-regular, occasionally amusing, and rarely funny series of conversations on a random topic. This episode is entitled Keeping Your Scene Alive. It's about cultivating a lifelong love of new music. Our guest for this episode knows something about it, about being a fan of music, Miss Anne Volk. Anne Volk, hello. Thank you, Anne, for being on here. You are a pioneer. You are our first female guest. So I just want to thank you for, breaking up the sausage fest that was.
Hey, has to happen here.
Has to happen eventually. So, Anne, why don't we start? Tell folks about what we did tonight.
Tonight, we went to see Frightened Rabbit, which is an awesome Scottish band that that I discovered, I'm trying to remember how many years ago, that I discovered and just kind of fell in love with. And
what was your first album of theirs? That would be the key. Was it...
The first album actually that I got was Midnight Organ
Fight. Midnight Organ Fight, so that's two albums ago. So that was at least 4 years ago, I guess, You know, when that record was new. And then what did we do?
Then once we left there, which we were on a high, after that, we went to Brillo Box to see Triggers, which is a really awesome Pittsburgh band that people should be listening to.
Yes, they should. And again, I have to, belie my connection. The keyboard player from Triggers, Mr. Brett Zorick, is the one who provided us with the intro and outro theme song of his music. He will be a guest on this show in a little bit.
And I do love that song, by the way.
And it is a great one. He came up with that in like 2 days. I asked him, and he's like, yeah, sure, I'll have you some. I asked him on like a Thursday, and he's like, I'll get to you on Monday, by Monday on the latest. And he's like all like stressed about it. I'm not going to do it, And so, didn't you have anything better to do? Like, why go in the hot, sweaty, cramped places?
Because I love music.
You love music? So there was nothing feeding the poor, helping people out, doing some self-improvement.
Been there, done that.
Been there, done that. Old hat. It's ruined.
I've done all of those things, but...
Yeah, so you said, though, you love music, and I think one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on as a guest on the show is that I had that experience of living up in the mountain. You live in up in Cambria County or whatever is it Blair County? I don't know what county. But you're on top of a mountain. There's probably not. I really don't think there's a good radio station in Pittsburgh, quite frankly. So you're at least 300-400 miles from a decent radio station.
Yes, and recently being without satellite radio
is a horror show. Yeah, and so you got that going on. Is there even an independent record store up there? I mean, I know there's stuff in State College, but like an independent record store.
Maybe to go down to Georgia's.
Okay, that's right. Georgia's and Johnson. How could I forget Georgia's and Johnson?
But again, I don't get
cool
there.
You don't
very
get there
often.
Much, And so, I could say, and I feel, in a way, I admire you because when I was a student up the mountain at St. Francis, living in Loretto, Pennsylvania, I went through this period in the late 90s, and just happened that late 90s alternapop was just the most dreadfully god-awful movement, The Nixons, like all those infinitely forgettable bands, Bush, the Nixons, they're so infinitely forgettable, I can't think of their names right now, but they would be the Pearl Jam light soundtrack to every time I got in my car and went somewhere. I just remember feeling really depressed and lost and like nobody else around me was really into music. I had a roommate who was into metal, but it was like this narrow little box of metal. Like you could play the Ronnie James Dio game, like the Kevin Bacon game, 6 Degrees of Kevin Bacon. So-and-so was in a movie with so-and-so. His entire CD collection was the Ronnie James Dio game. You could Ronnie James Dio was in Rainbow, and then he was in Black Sabbath, and then that guy who was in Rainbow and Black Sabbath was in Deep Purple, and then he played bass on this other record. And so literally, you could probably trace every song, every CD in his collection. I mean, he had all 28 Black Sabbath CDs, the first 6 good ones, and then all the dreck afterwards. But, you know, and so it was this really limited, I mean, he cared about music, but it was this really limited thing. And it was hard, like, and, you know, other people like, yeah, I'm in the Stone Temple Pilots, man. And, you know, I don't hate that band, but they were not the most fascinating, nourishing thing. And so I admire you for being able to do that, because I remember getting really depressed and feeling really lost and feeling as though I had heard it all and that it's over.
Oh. And I think what's more difficult for me is because I probably have about 20 years on you, Matt. And so
I wasn't going to put that out there.
but I will put that out there. That you know, to try to talk about the music that I like, there aren't a lot. There aren't a lot of people up around me that know, and certainly not people my age. And that's you know, that's why it's great to have friends who I can go to shows with, because it's definitely not the kind of music that the people that I went to St. Francis are probably listening to right now. And I think it's like that. I've always tried to keep current and tried to find new things that were good and interesting and that I liked. And fortunately, I think, and maybe I was helped by the fact that I was in education and students would know that I liked music. And so they would give me things. Like I had a student once who made me a tape with like Billy Bragg and things.
Wow. That's a moment.
You know, where, and so
hearing Billy Bragg, hearing Billy Bragg for the first time was
and it was just like, you know, and I'm sure nobody my age was listening to Billy Bragg, and she was this 16 year old girl who just said, "Oh, Miss Volk, I think you really need to hear this music."
And actually, you know, it's pretty funny to go full circle. You know, I was telling earlier today about my Cadillac. You know, and I went to a flea market today and I bought the toy car that I had when I was a kid. That was my favorite toy car. And then when I was at St. Francis, I bought that car. You know, I lost the Matchbox car. And so I decided, well, I'll just buy the real car, which is a really dumb idea. You know, but on the day that it exploded, the engine exploded, right, was the first day I heard Billy Bragg.
Wow.
And I was doing the service project for Faith and Franciscanism. And I was helping out with Habitat for Humanity. And I was like painting a room or something, you know, just something really like, oh, we got a volunteer. Here's a roller, go paint. And so I went and did that. And the guy who was like running the thing was in the other room. And he had this tape that like had like 3 Madness songs on it. And then it was Billy Bragg Back to Basics. Mm. And by the time I was over, I was like, excuse me, what is this? And it was just, you know, is opening of this whole world. And so that was, and then my car exploded. The engine of my car,
got to hear Billy Bragg.
I got to hear Billy Bragg for the first time, you know. Actually, it was to the tune of Monkey Wrench by the Foo Fighters. And for the longest, I mean, that's not a very good or interesting song, but for the longest time, I couldn't listen to it because it was such a traumatic, you know, thing. But I think that's one of the things is, you know, that's the flip side of it, is when you do have somebody who's really into something, or somebody who's into something interesting, it's really helpful, or fun, or there's this great human kind of bond moment, you know, where you go, oh, yeah, I really do care about that thing, too. But it also is then really isolating. Because, you know, people just kind of check out. Mm-hmm. People aren't interested anymore. And so my thing was, I was always just feeling really lonely and really alienated from people. Because I had this thing that I cared about that nobody else... There was nobody else to bounce ideas off of or share things with, really.
And sometimes they just look at you like, wait, who are you? And who are these people? Like Frightened Rat? I mean, I'll mention these bands and they'll...
Well, you know, I think the other weird thing about new music too and being current is I think for some people, it really pulls on maybe their insecurities about their own age and their own insecurities about being uncool, that I know stuff that they don't and I'm just not with it. You know, and I think what's one of the things that's happening, I think, with music now that was different from back then is there's no mainstream anymore, really. And there's so many things available and there's so many things happening at once that, you know, people think even still in my life, that I'm this oracle and I know all the new music. And there's so much shit that I haven't listened to that has come out in the last 2-3 years. And I just, it's just not on my radar. I just never got around to listening to those records. You know, I just, I buy in what I listen to.
Well, you know? And there's so, and yeah, because there is so much that's out there, both good and bad. And, yeah. You know, and sometimes what I, at least the good thing about satellite radio is sometimes I will hear something. Like Japandroids. That's yes. where I, that that's, I heard Japandroids that's your outlet on.
Is satellite radio, which I didn't oh. have. I mean, mm-hmm. it was really, it was pre-internet. You know, we had, or early stages of the internet. Like, I was there when St. Francis got the internet.
Yeah.
And it was in labs. It wasn't in dorms. Mm-hmm. It wasn't in the house I lived in off campus.
See, and I was even prior to that, where, I mean, I'm trying to think about, you know, we just, I don't know where we got music from. Like, I can remember listening to the B-52s, and I think it was just a friend who had, you know, kind of discovered, because they weren't really mainstream, and mm-hmm. it was kind of a friend who had discovered the B-52s and you know, yeah. going to Rock Lobster and,
yes, you
and
know,
Planet
and
Claire,
I,
you know.
I will say, that record, that first B-52s record that came out in 78, 79... Mm-hmm. I am in awe of that record. I have that record. It's in this room. It's right over
yes,
there.
It's and an awesome record.
It's an awesome record. And I think about just their look mm-hmm. and their sound. And I mean, I just wonder for people at that time when that was new, like that must have been like, that was coming from another fucking planet. Mm-hmm. You know? And it just was just totally blew some mm-hmm. people away. And I think it's one of those records that, you know, it's almost as old as I am, but it still sounds fresh mm-hmm. and exciting and... You know, I'm just so in awe of that record. But yeah, how do you even get to that stuff?
Yeah, because I'm not even quite sure how that yeah. happened. You know, because they certainly weren't mainstream and they certainly weren't what a lot of campus would have been listening to.
Yeah, but... which was always, I mean, my thing, you know, when I was there and I started as a freshman fall 95, in some ways grunge hadn't hit yet. You mm. know, I mean, Kurt Cobain okay. was already gone.
Yeah.
And that... mentality of let's kill the 80s, let's kill super hyper produced pop music. Mm-hmm. Actually, in a weird way, in like the spring of 99, I think people up there were ready for it. But at the time, I was like, I was already moved past it and we're going to yeah. be decadent. And it was just so hard. But again, there's a flip side to that because when I did find stuff or when I had stuff, there was this incredible sense of ownership to it for me. They're like, aha, I found this secret that no one else knows about, you know.
Yeah, I guess that's true. It is like, you know, when I'll mention things to people and everybody are like, who?
Who, what?
But I think, God, these are, you know, this is this amazing group, you know, when I try to explain, like, we were promised jetpacks or...
Yeah, or things. And I sometimes think about, you know, when you think about, you know, I thought about it during the Frank and Rabbit show tonight and actually during the Trigger set, too, because both bands are just kind of magical in my mm-hmm. world. I think about all the people that don't get to have these kinds of experiences. And it is kind of weird. Like, where do they get that sense of just, wow, I'm witnessing something special and exciting. And I'll tell you, the other side of it is, and it's going to sound a little fucked up, but what I think a good show is when I start thinking about the mortality of everybody in the room.
Mm.
And I start thinking about it. Somebody in this room is going to be the last survivor of this concert. The last wow. witness of it. And with them, this moment in history will die. Whoa. Which wow. is a weird thing. To think about death, but then you think
well,
about...
Well, but it fits well with Frightened Rabbit. Who,
it does.
I mean, and I think that's one of the things with that... I mean, I love the musical sound to it, but lyrically, I feel like he can pull into that depths of despair.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
you know, and that's some of what I've loved about their music, is just they can just capture that moment of despair.
Yeah, absolutely. Of being alone in the earth. I mean, yes. know, when Scott Hutchinson, the lead singer, did, you know, the solo acoustic version of the song Poke off mm-hmm. of Midnight Organ Fight, which is just devastating. It's about, you know, a love affair that the two people had grown apart, mm-hmm. you know, and it's just haunting, you know, to be able to draw on that and to be so in touch with something that kind of human.
And to make it come alive. I mean,
and
I
to
think
make
he
it
just
come alive.
Does that so well.
Yeah, which for me, like, just mainstream music has never done that. No. You know, not since that moment when I still remember the moment when I first heard Smells Like Teen Spirit on the radio.
Oh.
And at the time in New York City, yeah, I was in the New York City media market growing up in New Jersey. There really wasn't a new rock station. There were the two college stations that I hadn't found out about yet that did, like, no promotion. And there was this Jersey Shore station that barely came through, it's gone now. And there was a pop station that would play U2. They played Epic by Faith No More. They played Cult of Personality by Living Color and the occasional REM song.
Okay.
And then there was the classic rock station that would play U2, but the rest of it was Zeppelin. And if they would play REM, there was just this cascade of hatred.
Mm.
Like, they would mention about how angry phone calls they would get if they played, wow, like, Losing My Religion or something, you know. It was that, you know, rock music was something that wasn't happening in my lifetime, which was this weird thing. And then this happened. This song just came on the radio. I remember I was in my parents' basement, and I had a toy train set. I was that young still. And I stopped what I was doing and was just like, what the fuck is this? You know, like, what is this? And I listened to the radio for 2 days in a panic. Because it wasn't Spotify. You know, I couldn't, like, Google it.
No.
I couldn't Shazam it. It was just like, what was that song? What was it called? And I heard it again. And I, you know, it was the era of cassette. And I, like, for 2 days had record pause in the tape player, and then I got half the song, and they still didn't say what it was called. And I was like, what if they never play it again? How am I ever going to know? And it was just that panic, which is another weird thing, is now we at least have all this information.
But even when
available,
popular, I mean, I think the thing that I remember is people that were contemporaries of mine saying, like, you like that? You listen to that?
Yeah. What?
You know, like, that's not music. That's it.
Yeah, which is one of the things I want to really get to today is, or tonight, or 2:30 in the yes. morning on a Saturday, is that moment when people start to tune out. Because, I mean, that's the thing I know, you know, when people, I know my contemporaries, when I was young, you know, in my late teens, early 20s, people released, you know, at least when I was growing in high school, everybody was into music and everybody was into different stuff. And then I go up into this isolated place, you know, where nobody was into anything. But at least some people would be kind of open to new things or open to, like, hey, you know, listen to this band or whatever. But one of the things I found, you know, now that I'm halfway to 70, is that there are people I know who have just kind of, like, you know, not only gotten off the fast lane, but got off the expressway, or that music stopped sometime in the 90s, or music stopped at graduation. And that's always been kind of a weird experience. I mean, did you find it, like, when people started, you found people starting in your life, your contemporaries, starting to kind of tune out?
Yeah, well, I mean, and again, because I think being in my 50s and you know, continuing to listen to new stuff. And I, you know, there are people that just like, well, I don't listen to the radio anymore. Or I, you know,
yeah.
there's not, and I, believe me, there's stuff on the radio that I don't want to listen to either. That's there. I always laugh about, there's a game on Facebook that's Song Pop.
So I
started playing because some friend invited me to play Song Pop, and there's a category that's Today's Hits. And every time somebody plays Today's Hits with me, I think, oh my God, that's like what people are listening to today. What's wrong?
Yeah, well, that's my thing is too. I'm one of those people too. I mean, I turn the radio off in 2001. I mean, I make my own soundtrack. Mm-hmm. I buy CDs. Mm-hmm. I buy records. I do my own thing. And it's kind of weird, because it wasn't till this year's Oscars, the 2013 Oscars, that I actually heard an Adele song.
Oh.
And the previous year, she had, like, swept the Grammys whatever. And then I finally heard her voice, and it was just like, oh, that's a thing people love?
Mm-hmm.
I just didn't get it, but it's, I have my own thing. You know, Ian MacKay, and I don't feel alone, though, because I remember seeing an interview with Ian MacKay of Fugazi in The Evens. And he said that he never heard a Guns N' Roses song.
Wow.
He has an image in his mind, he says, what he thinks Guns N' Roses sounds like, But he never actually heard a Guns N' Roses song. And I was just like, okay, I'm not a freak. You know what I mean? I have something.
Yeah.
To you know.
And again, it's not that people can have their own taste in music, but I think that there's so much out there that's going on.
That's exciting and interesting.
Yes. That's really good. And, you know, people just don't hear it or don't know about it. And so I find myself, you know, even students of mine, I'm up in the mountains in a rural area. And so, I mean, they don't even know some of the stuff that I'm listening to. I mean, they look at me like,
I teach in a city and I have the same issue. You know, there's, which is a weird thing that there's like lame young people.
It's just like they're not, I mean, and they're not hearing any of this that's going on that's so exciting. And, I mean, or to experience, like, tonight.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that was two little bits of transcendence.
And I think that there are a lot of people, and again, teaching where I do teach, I think there are a lot of people that never experience things like that.
Yeah, which is, I think, really sad and unfortunate.
And I just want to keep experiencing it, you know, and hopefully, I mean, one day I probably will lose my hearing. But I can't imagine not being able to listen to new stuff.
Yeah.
And just hearing what's out there and, you know, and in a variety of different things. Like, there's still a part of me that loves the punk scene.
Oh, yeah.
And a couple years ago, I saw Against Me, which is one of my favorite punk bands that was here in Pittsburgh and, you know, and listening to the Ramones and Bad Religion and those kind of things. But, then I can tune in and put on, you know, something like Grizzly Bear.
Yes.
Which is a totally different kind of sound that's there.
Yeah. Which is, I think, I know a thing for me, when you speak about punk rock, I went through that period where I was really, like, angry and defensive. And a lot of that was that early 90s alternative nation defensiveness. And it's like, if it's not punk or metal, it sucks. You know, and it was, you know, and there was just things that were just forbidden. And as I got older, I got, like, more bored with stuff, and I couldn't stay in that little box. So there's the way that I think also just the expansion of that, and to realize that if I lived another 100 years, I still wouldn't be able to hear everything that's good.
I agree. And even sometimes I think, oh my God, there's not enough time even to play some of these. Some of the CDs that I buy, you know. And you were kind of asking me how, you know, we were talking about the new Bad Religion. And I said, you know, I've only probably played it once or twice.
Yeah.
And
I get that too. I mean, if I buy things in bunches, I buy 4 or 5 things at once. Yeah. You know, there's like the two things that dominate. But I always think that is the result, in some ways, of my, maybe being, you know, my dad was a child of the Depression. And so there still is a grocery store chain called ShopRite. And they used to have this thing called the Can-Can Sale, where they would have sales on canned goods. My dad would buy cases of things like green beans. And, you know, but he grew up, he was born in 1930. Mm-hmm. And so his whole thing was, I gotta have food. There's gotta be food. And I think living through those lean late 90s years, I gotta have music. If I don't have music, I gotta, you know, it's something Chuck Olson actually said, art professor at St. Francis, famous painter now, said about, you know, buying things. He said, you know, he wants his well of ideas, you know, if you have books or arts or whatever in your life, that's your well of ideas. And you always, it's like the well of ideas should be like your well of drinking water. It always should be a little deeper than you need it to be. You know, and so I feel like I'm not wasting. I'm just, you know, replenishing or whatever.
And even if I only do listen to it a couple times, and then maybe I'll pick it up 6 months later, you know,
years later, or things that I find that I wasn't ready for at the time, you know, is. But it's such a rich kind of mental life. And I think the other thing is, I think is because we have to find it now, or you have to get it through sort of talking to people. Because there's no radio, there's no... Again, when I was, you know, Alternative Nation, while there was a show on MTV, and I just knew I had those were the bands I had to get, and there were Buzz Clips, or it would be on the college station, or the Jersey Shore station, that was where Matt Pinfield used to work, you know, who was a good guy before he ruined 120 Minutes. And all of that. But now it's, yeah, it is talking to people.
It's talking to people, but I think it's also out there more, that, you know, in terms of things like satellite radio. And even, you know, some of where I remember hearing some of the first Frightened Rabbit was actually on a TV show, Chuck.
Oh!
That the producer of Chuck was into Frightened Rabbit, and so he used Frightened Rabbit in the shows a lot.
Yeah.
And so you'll hear things like you'll, you know, I've heard some tracks...
Yeah.
On shows, you know, and I remember, I'm trying to remember what the show was that somebody, that we were promised Jetpacks had a song that played for.
Yeah.
And so you get these little glimpses of things. And again, having satellite radio has been good for me in terms of things like Japandroids that never would have touched
made it
my
to the
radio.
Or...
I mean, no, because they wouldn't be in local radio, and it wouldn't have been something I never would have been exposed to had it not been for the satellite that's there. So,
yeah. Do you use the internet too? Do you use, like, as far as, like, I mean, I'm somebody also, I'm a compulsive reader of about 5 music websites.
No, I do. And I look at things like I look at the Pitchfork site and
Pitchfork, Stereogum.
Yes, to see you know, when they say best new music, I think, okay, let me listen and see if that's something that I'm really into.
I'll tell you something that has helped me out a lot or opened my mind up a bit. There's a website, I think it's out of the UK, it's called The Quietus. Mm-hmm. And they have a feature called The Baker's Dozen. What The Baker's Dozen is they pick an artist. And they choose 13 albums that really influence them or they think people should know about. And then the artist writes a, 250 to 500 word review of the record as what this record is, what it means to me, why you should go out and buy it. And that, if it's somebody that I like, I mean, there's like Black Francis has done it, Jazz Coleman of Killing Joke, Wayne Coyne of the Flaming Lips. Really cool people. The lead guy in Mogwai, the bald dude in Mogwai. Yeah, that guy. He did one, and so then I was like, okay, I need Slint Spiderland, because the dude in Mogwai said them and Arab Strap. And so I'm just like, all right, gotta go get those records.
And that's I've gotten to things that way. I got to Jetpacks through Frightened Rabbit.
Yeah.
And then I got to a band called Foals and that was all really because on the Facebook page for Jetpacks they were talking about this new album by this band Foals and they were like, go out and buy it, and so I'm like, okay, well maybe I'll take a listen.
And that is a great record. You know, it was funny because it was Brett, the theme song Triggers guy, who was like, have you heard the new Foals record? I was like, no. He's like, you should really get it. It's great. And that man has never steered me wrong.
No, and he's been good. Okay, you know what I remember? Menomina.
Yeah, that's right.
What came from, because I got
trickled
that from
down
you.
From,
yes.
From me, but through him. He started it. He was Genesis, and then, well, not Genesis, but
yes,
the beginning.
But
the beginning.
He started
not,
it.
Not
the. And
not,
then you put stuff out there, and I was like, oh, yeah, I really like this. And
I think it's this great, like, kind of new tribalism. That people have, you know, but you have to, like, almost now, I think, cultivate it and be looking for it.
Well, and you do, because it's not just right out. I mean, it's, you know.
Yeah. But I think it's a different dynamic, because I know we were talking earlier tonight, like, the world before the internet and before, like, you can just order stuff. And I remember going to record stores sometimes and, like, the good ones. And they had the bands that people talked about. Like, I'll never forget, Dead Kennedys, Plastic Surgery Disasters, In God We Trust Incorporated combo CD. And finding that in a record store in my hometown. And just thinking to myself, oh my God, this is the most amazing thing in human. This is a real thing. Like, I didn't know they made these or something like that. It was a mass-produced CD, but to me at that moment, And as an uptight, upset college student, that the second track on that record's Terminal Preppy, that I think I listened to that, I was like, what does this even sound like? And, you know, the Dead Kennedys are just so fast and furious and intense and whatever. And then Terminal Preppy, I think I counted, I listened to that song on repeat 19 times.
Wow.
Because it was absolutely the way I felt about the people that surrounded me constantly and why I didn't get along with them. And why I couldn't stand them and how their values were not my values, even though I think at the time I wouldn't use the word values to describe anything about how I felt, and I wasn't really sure what my values were at the time, but that song was the moment, you know, the oracle, you know, but I felt such an ownership of it. Mm-hmm. I think I then called people. I called my friends long distance from my parents' house. I think I made somebody listen to that song over the phone. And of course it was over the phone, and it was just, you know, it was just noise, you know. But I was like, don't worry, man, I'll make you a tape. You know, I'll make you a mixtape and you'll get it, you know, and people did.
And I think that's the thing, too, with music for me is that, you know, it's looking at those lyrics again that can express what it is, you know, what it is you're feeling. I think that punk pulled into my political leanings,
uh-huh.
And so I embrace that, and looking at things like Frightened Rabbit that pull into those the despair that I sometimes feel, mm-hmm. or just even looking at a song like Against Me that did a song more recently called White Crosses,
mm-hmm.
And it was just like, yes, that's exactly how I feel when I drive past a church that has all those white crosses. I just want to smash them. I mean, they were singing that, and I said, yes, that is exactly what I feel.
Yeah.
And I think that's also part of the power of music is that it pulls those feelings that are there.
Yeah, I think it's sometimes too for me as a young person who, you know, I think I now have this life, you know, doctorate, whatever, critical theory person who lives in this world of ideas. Maybe it was through music was the first time I ever really thought about aesthetics. Now I'm an English professor.
Mm.
And ideas larger than my own head. I mean, I remember having in graduate school a class on post-colonial theory and going, oh, this is Sepultura's Chaos AD album. This is the first time I encountered these ideas and was confronted with them was in a Brazilian death metal album, you know. But, yeah, it had that incredible power. And I think that incredible responsive immediacy. You know, literature is slow, academia is slow, mm-hmm. but records can kind of come out that year and have that sort of zeitgeist mm-hmm. kind of moment.
And it is immediate, you know, and I do say, I mean, I'm a lover of literature and I love
books are cool, folks.
You know, but it's, I think it's that it's right out there with the music. Mm-hmm. Boom. It's there. As I said, when I feel like I want to kick ass, I like to put on some Japandroids. They're like, you know, that's what really gets it. You know, it pulls into right what's going on at the center of me.
Yeah. And if we can kind of scale it back before we end this part of the show, I want to talk about, you know, what was like maybe your first kind of profound musical memory?
Wow.
When was the first time, what was the first song, moment that you found that maybe music really affected you?
Wow, that's a very, very tough question, you know, because part of me just can't remember a time when I wasn't
really
like pulled in by music of some, you know, even like poppy kind of music that was out there.
Well, yeah, well, I mean, what was like, some of the stuff
I said,
that
I just
was...
remembered, you know what I remember was a song such a bizarre song called Timothy by the Boys that was
Timothy
about it was about cannibalism and eating.
Oh, really? I've never heard this song.
I mean, it was like 1972 or something. I was young. I was probably like, you know, like fourth or fifth grade. And this was like, this was the song of they got trapped in this, in the mine, and then they end up eating Timothy. That was the...
Really? That's yes. wonderful.
I mean,
and
just
weird.
This bizarre. And I think I got pulled into it. And, you know, you and I were talking about this whole song, This Alone Again Naturally, which the Gilbert O'Sullivan,
yeah.
back in my day, that had been redone and the whole controversy about that. But I thought just pulling into this song about, I mean, this guy who just was so depressed and wanted to commit suicide. And and I remember being pulled in by a song like that, too. Just that whole depth of feeling.
Yeah, I know what you mean. And it was that thing, that depth of feeling, or stuff that was just, it was still pop music, but it was just a little different.
Yes.
Like, today, you know, when I was at the flea market, I didn't pick it up, but they had this is going to sound shameful and awful. It was a split greatest hit CD. It was two bands that they couldn't, like, warrant their own greatest hit CD. Naked Eyes and Spandau Ballet.
Wow.
And True and Always Something There to Remind
God,
Me.
Yes.
It just that cascading synth part, I remember as a very young person going, that's just different. Or what is that?
Well, the other thing that I can think of, because I was talking about his new album, is I just remembered Bowie and Space Oddity and you know, that whole Ground Control to Major Tom that was just so very different, and just being pulled into that.
Yeah, and just going, what is that?
Yes, you know? And so that's why I think I like, even in the new, I mean, the new album is different than any of that, but
which I think is amazing, me think about people like him that can continue to grow.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not like a huge, I'm kind of hit or miss with Bowie.
I know, and
like,
I
Bowie
am too.
Bowie is the greatest or whatever. Mm. But then there's other times, you know, there's other artists that just can kind of keep moving and keep creating and keep doing quality work. It's almost like the people that check out, there's musicians that check out, or that they lose it, or they have this perpetually reflective, remember the glory days kind of thing, which always kind of weirds me out, you know, when people get that or go there. I felt, to go back to that period when I was at St. Francis, you know, there's nothing new and this is it and it was over. I even remember, and this is a more recent musical anxiety that I had that I've gotten over, that if I was born at a different moment in history, could I have survived?
Wow.
Because I think music for me is such a part of my mental health. But then, you know, I've heard Rodriguez. I also picked up, you know, Captain Beefheart, Trout Mask Replica. You know, maybe I could have found a Nick Drake record if I was alive in 1972 or something. And that would, I would think I might have been okay. Yeah. You know what I mean? But I remember thinking that, God, what if I lived before grunge? What would I have done? You know? But
you then I lived before grunge, and now I've evolved with everything.
Yes, and so we're all okay.
Yes.
And on that note, since we're all okay, it's time for the bottom five, a series of questions not related to our main topic that are of a surrealistic and or philosophical nature. Are you ready, Anne? Are you ready to go?
I don't know. As ready as I'll ever be, I guess.
Okay, that's good. All right, question one. I gotta retire this one soon, I think, but you can get it.
Oh, yes, you do. How about now?
If reincarnation is real, and you had to come back as an infectious disease or illness, what kind of disease would you be?
See, and you know, even though I knew this question was coming,
yes,
I just don't even have a clue in my mind. I love the answer, Brandon's answer of a sexually transmitted disease.
I thought that'd be really cool,
but I can't steal his.
Which is a weird thing to think about, too, with sexually transmitted disease. I mean, that's truly maybe the greatest link to our human ancestors.
Yeah,
you know?
So I thought,
so-and-so slept with so-and-so, and eventually you get back to cave people or something. So that's pretty impressive, you know. So now you got nothing.
I got nothing on.
You know, Ebola.
Oh, I don't know. See,
Spanish
flu. I don't want to be an infectious disease because it's not part of my persona.
Even just something that's annoying. No, all right. You know, you don't want to be disease at all. How about just a cold sore?
God, no, that's gross. I don't want
that's
to be a gross.
Gross. Don't want to be a cold
disease,
sore.
See? So I said his illness is all gross and all.
Male pattern baldness? maybe. That's not really a disease. That's not really a thing.
No, I don't know if we can count that.
Since you've been reduced to a gene. Like, you've been an autonomous being.
Yes, I don't think we have. Because I was going to say dwarfism or something.
Yeah, which if you're a gene, then, you know, you think about that, that means you really screwed up in life.
Yes.
You know, if that's the truth, then you've mutated down. You don't even get to run your own show anymore. You know, we're talking single-celled organisms. You don't even get to be that. That would be kind of bad. All right, question two then. What's the strangest injury you've ever suffered?
Oh my God.
Strangest way you've ever hurt yourself, got messed up.
God, I'm just trying to, I'm trying to think about this. There are a couple things I can think of. I just, not that it was strange, but I just, when I was a kid, there were a whole group of us that were going to go on this bike ride and I didn't have a bike.
Oh.
My parents didn't. I mean, they just, you know, my parents were just like, no, we're not going to invest and buy you a bike kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So I borrowed a bike from somebody. And so we start along and we're going down this hill and the handlebars just came off the bike.
Oh, my God.
And I just skidded. I mean, bam, into the stones that were on along the side of the road. And just, it was really awful all over my face. And then they had to tell, all I remember was this doctor taking this brush to try to get all the rock and the dirt out of my face, which was really gross. Sorry, this is really gross to put on the air, but I said just the way that it happened, that I'm just like riding down this hill and just the handlebars just came
off. Oh, that's, I mean, that's cartoonish. I mean, that sounded like a bit from a Buster Keaton movie.
Yes, I mean, it would have never happened in a million years, but that was my life.
Yes. All right, question three. What's your most irrational pet peeve?
Irrational? Does something... Are any of my pet peeves
irrational?
What's
the thing that just...
Come on.
How about this? Is there a thing that's just stupid that sends you to red line anger? I'll tell you mine.
All right, go ahead and tell you.
Though, the whole thing about hosting this is you never have to answer these questions. But the thing that pisses me off to no end, to the point of like, I'll kill you and your full family, is people who juxtapose the words scratch and itch.
Oh my God, wow.
People who use scratch to say they have an itch, and then they itch a scratch. That, for some reason, pisses me off.
Yeah, I guess I could strangle
that person.
Like, the word slippy bothers me.
Oh, the word slippy bothers me.
Which is, I know, a Pittsburgh word.
Well, it's not just a Pittsburgh word. You think where we were tonight. That is part of Scots-Irish. That's in the southwestern Pennsylvania dialect.
Interesting.
Yeah, so don't let Scott Hutchinson.
I can talk about. I said, you know, probably what's an irrational pet peeve of mine that relates to the topic we were discussing tonight is people that like things like train.
That's not irrational to me. Train is
just like this personification of all that's bad about music. And
yeah,
so,
that can be evil and worthless. And
so I've always had this thing, and God knows why Train gets picked on of all the other bad groups that are out there, but it's always when somebody tells me, oh, yes, Train, I like Train, I'm like...
Mediocrity is a sin.
No.
Mediocrity is absolutely a sin.
So that would be probably an irrational pet peeve that relates to our topic there. Okay. So,
question four. You ready?
Sure.
Is there anything in your home that you are afraid of? Is there anything that is underneath the roof that you live in that you're just like, man, I'm not messing with that? Is there anything that you're like, that's in your house, but, oh, God, that could kill me or that could maim me or...
God, I can't think of a thing in my house that I'm afraid of.
You can't think of a thing. You're fine with electricity, natural gas,
all
your utilities.
I have no natural gas. It's all electricity. Doesn't bug me at all. I used to actually really like lightning storms and things.
Oh,
like,
okay. So that's good. That's good. All right. Question five. You're almost through it. And this is a good question. So I'm looking for a number.
All right.
Okay. You have to do a mental tally. of out of the people who have seen you naked, how many do you never want to speak to ever again? People that have seen you in the buff that you hope to never encounter and never talk to ever again in your life.
To do a tally of that?
To do a tally of people that you know that have, you know. And this isn't just, this could be ex-lovers, this could also if you played a team sport, high school locker room.
I know, I'm trying to think about that, like I'm trying to think about like doctors and things that
there's
I
there's doctors see, too, you know? Yeah, that's right, I like, feel about doctors.
Like, oh my god, you know.
TSA agents.
I have to say, even my doctor who has, my current doctor has not seen me naked, but I think I would probably be almost uncomfortable with that because I was his sixth grade teacher. So
that's like, weird.
Yeah, so that's even when weird. He does the little check of my body, I'm like,
well, and you think
there's
about it, not only
odd about this.
Could he then probably imagine, but then he knows what you look like on the inside.
I know
what I mean? He looks like what you
it's
know, like, both in
like
your
that.
Skin and without it.
Yes. Yes. So there's a weird thing, even though I've not been fully unclothed in his presence, but even when he's doing just the little,
yeah,
you know, it's like, I remember you sitting at a desk there.
Yeah, that would be very strange. I could say there's one that I heard, maybe not, you know, a bad thing, but that kind of level of embarrassment is, I guess it was my mother-in-law. They were doing, you know, they had medical students there when, you know, she was giving birth the one time. And so she's there in the stirrups. And somebody goes, Margaret, how are you?
Oh my God.
And it was one of the medical students was a former, like, friend or kid from the neighborhood. And there she is in this undignified, really vulnerable position. So that's kind of the...
Yeah, that would be where... Yeah, goodbye. I don't want to see you anymore.
Yes, I don't want to be known. No. Yes. Well, I think that's about it. Our next episode will eventually happen, and it will be about something. Actually, I think we're gonna do a double header here, though it's the late hour. Our homepage, as always, is gonnadiepodcast.com. You can get old episodes, new episodes, the occasional extra content. We're also, of course, on that Apple interface where all of our episodes are there. Follow us on Twitter at gonnadiepodcast. And we're all going to die on Facebook and Google+, because, you know, I think I'm the only person right now who likes myself on Google+. Thanks to Brett Zork, as always, for the lovely theme music, Later Meets.